Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray and Craig Burley here with you in the studio, and we will be starting the show with a look back at UEFA's decisions following an emergency meeting on Friday after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. They've said that the Champions League final will be moved from St. Petersburg to Paris, and Russian and Ukrainian clubs and national teams competing in UEFA competitions will be required to play their home matches at neutral venues until further notice. Jules Laurent joins us once again to discuss. Jules, what's been your reaction to UEFA's decisions here?
Well, the most symbolic one, really, Ken, we touched upon it in yesterday's show as well, was the Champions League final and the fact that they stripped Russia and St. Petersburg of hosting the final at the end of May to move it to another city. That city was Paris or Saint-Denis, where the Stade de France is. President Macron, I think, played a big part in France and Paris recuperating, if you want, the Champions League final. This is the most symbolic one, the one that we expected the most. There's obviously the Russian national team and the Russian clubs having to play on neutral venues. A lot of people, including myself, believe that that was far too soft and that those clubs and the Russian national team should have been expelled from UEFA competitions, from FIFA competitions as well. Russia should not be in contention to go to the World Cup, not take part in that World Cup playoff against Poland and potentially of the World Cup playoff final as well to make it to Qatar. I think it's the same for the Russian clubs still involved in European competitions, Spartak Moscow in the Europa League, who was part of the draw today. For example, UEFA, at the moment at least, haven't gone that far, but they've gone further maybe than some of us expected on the contract with Gazprom, which is one of the most important sponsors of UEFA, bringing around 40 million euros a year. And it looks at the moment that lawyers of UEFA and of Gazprom are in discussion to terminate that contract, which would be, I think, a big stance from UEFA to part ways with Gazprom. We saw Manchester United parting ways with Aeroflot, the Russian flying company. So you can see already the sanctions towards Russia from the world of football.
If the situation continues to unfold, Jules, what else might we see happening in football?
Well, the name here in England that has been spoken a lot today is Roman Abramovich. Of course, the Chelsea owner, the Russian Chelsea owner, who clearly under a lot of pressure. We heard Chris Bryan, the Labour MP today, saying that Roman Abramovich should sell Chelsea Football Club, that the England and Great Britain should freeze his asset, including his magnificent London home worth £150 million, for example. Clearly, a lot of people politically, but also I think around sports, want some sanctions towards Roman Abramovich, who it's not clear how close to Vladimir Putin he is. It used to be maybe a long time ago, of course. Let's not forget that in 2005 he sold his shares in Sibnev, the company that made him so rich, back to the Kremlin and decided to leave Russia at the time. So it's not really clear how close to Vladimir Putin he is right now, if he's one of those oligarchs who are really close to the Kremlin or one that has taken his distances already. And of course, depending on the level of relationship between Abramovich and Putin, then the sanctions, I guess, could be different. We saw his daughter today, one of his children, taking a very strong stance against the invasion of Ukraine by Russia and against that war created by Russia. So I think that remains to be seen what happens to Roman Abramovich, but there's more and more voices who put him under pressure right now in the UK.
Thanks for the update, Jules. Let's take a look now at the reaction to the game between Napoli and Barcelona in the Europa League. This is the Catalan press, Mundo Deportivo, saying excellent, bravissimo. Sport going with bravo Barça, ole Barça. Jules still with us, along with Stuart Robson and Don Hutchison. In fact, Don was on the call for this game. Was this the best you've seen from Barça this season, Don?
Absolutely, Kay. I wouldn't jump to quick as to say they're back to their best, but it sort of felt like it. It felt like when I was watching the personnel play and I watched Dest play at right back, who was so, so quick. I watched Alba, who got his goal, played at left back. Araujo and Pique had a good partnership at the back. The midfield looked like a Barcelona midfield. You know, Pedri played really well. Frankie de Jong was probably man of the match. Busquets, as we've seen for many a year, was pulling strings. Then you had all of the pace at the top end of the pitch. Ferran Torres, Adama Traoré was excellent. Aubameyang, I mean, looks like a completely different player since he's gone to Barca. He was incredible. And I watched the performance in Naples and commentated on the game, and not many go to Napoli, beat them 4-1, and it could have been 7. Barca were that good, they were that strong. And watching them, it almost felt like their arrogance was back in a good way. And they played really well. They were excellent.
Well, there was a lot of excitement, you'll remember, Stuart, after the first game of the season when Barca played Real Sociedad. So do you think that maybe after this people are getting carried away, or is it justified, the reaction that we're seeing?
Slightly carried away. I mean, they played very well against Napoli, and Don's absolutely right. They're starting to have patterns of play, and they played well against Valencia last weekend, particularly in the first half, where Aubameyang gave them a different edge because he was making runs in behind, and it allowed space for the likes of Ferran Torres, and it was Dembele on that occasion who was coming in behind him. And the midfield, as Don said, Frankie de Jong is starting to look like the player we saw at Ajax. He's now scoring goals, he's making forward runs, and he's allowing Busquets to control the midfield. And then they've got the likes of Pedri and Gavi. So it's a good side at the moment. But remember, in the second half against Valencia, they were put under pressure. They started to concede balls into the box. They started to lose headers when it was coming in. So they're a very good side going forward at the moment. I still have my question marks about them defensively over the course of the rest of the season.
What have you liked from what you've seen from Barca so far this season?
This season?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's go recently, in recent games.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big step. But the bar was down there, right? I mean, it was bad. I mean, it was just nothing like what we'd come to expect. That's how much of a shambles it had become. They had a guy in charge in Ronald Koeman who really shouldn't have been there. He was bringing players in that couldn't even be... the club was bringing players in, it couldn't be registered. He didn't know his best team. There was players... Oh, it was just horrible. Horrible. So they've come a long way, short term. But I'm the Robbo here to an extent. It's a short-term fix at the moment. I think the big thing is he has options. I didn't see the game yesterday, but I go back to the Atleti game when we saw Traore play after he signed in from Wolves. But then he was left out recently. Don't forget, they got a late De Jong goal against Espanyol in the derby to rescue a point there. So it's not all been great, but just little by little. And as Don said, Frankie De Jong is a player that really now has to step up. You know, Busquets can't get around the field. He can pass, but he can't get around the field. Frankie de Jong can do a little bit of everything. And he, as a big signing, as a big talent coming in from Holland, I think potentially could flourish under this manager. But it's a lot better, Kay, that's what I would say. But it is coming from a very low starting point.
Jules, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I agree with Craig. I mean, where they were with the Dutch guy compared to where they are now, I mean, the difference is huge, it's massive. I think we said in yesterday's show that collectively they've improved, and we saw more, maybe, variety in the game. I mean, the first goal against Napoli, that counter-attack, that blistering counter-attack would never happen 6 months ago, for example. But now they've added that sort of verticality to the game. They still have the possession game, of course, and this is Barca DNA, they will always have it. And I think Xavi works a lot on that, and at times it was going too fast for Napoli on Thursday night, and then individually, of course, as well, not just the new signing. And if you look at the new signing, I think Ferran Torres, Adama and Aubameyang, the three of them have had 6 goals and 6 assists put together since they joined the club, so already that's a tick for success so far, certainly. But also the guys who were already there, Jordi Alba is playing probably better than he's done in the last 18 months, same with Busquets, same with De Jong. So not just Xavi has improved the whole team, and collectively with the ball, without the ball, but also individually, you see a lot of those players getting back to their best or very close to their best, and that's also the big difference.
Meanwhile, as well, you're talking about all those players there, Jules. One player that everyone seems to be talking about at the moment, Don, is Pedri. And Xavi himself said there is no bigger prospect in football now than Pedri. How far can he go?
right to the very top. Incredible player. I think he's so mature for one that's so young. He sees the pitcher, he gets around the pitch, his passing range is good, whether it's short or long. He's versatile. He plays the game, you know, very easily for a youngster. He joins the front men. Just quickly going back to Frankie Dunn, I thought Xavi's tactics against Napoli was absolutely spot on, because Napoli went with the two in midfield and Xavi went with two, but he played Frankie de Jong as a sort of number 10 and he caused all sorts of mayhem. No one was picking him up, but the versatility of Pedri just behind him alongside Busquets was enormous, because the kid is going to go right to the very top. You can see everything in his game. He just looks very calm and so cultured.
I was just wondering, are we still calling Kylian Mbappe and Erling Haaland prospects? have they gone sailing past that? They're,
maybe because they've been around the scene a bit longer.
They're old timers now. But no, he needed a rest after Euros and then the Olympics and all that sort of stuff. And I don't know how much he got, but the club, I think, was sensible to say, I don't remember how much time he had off, but he certainly had some time off. You cannot, you know, just keep putting these young guys in all the time. So they were quite sensible with that. They've managed it well up to this point. Clearly, he's not alone in Barcelona and you know, in Spain. He's got a head on his shoulders, got a football brain of somebody that's played 50, 60 times for the country. You know, probably played 300 or 400 games in the mid-20s. He sees everything. He's got a great picture in his mind. And yeah, it's down to him. And I think with the arrival of Xavi as manager, he's got somebody who understands that part of the game very well. He was one of the best. And so, you know, injury-free and a little bit of luck here and there, then yeah, they've got a real gem in their hands. But of course, we know that anyway.
Yeah, like Craig was saying though, Robbo, 19 years old. It's so incredible to see just the talent that Pedri has.
Yeah, he's brilliant. And he's also had that rest that Craig talked about, which is a good thing for Gavi now, because Gavi was going down the same road. He was playing excellently. He could play in a forward area. He could play in midfield. And he was starting to play game after game after game as a 17-year-old. He played in the Europa League finals, not the Europa League, but the Europa League for Spain, and played very well in those games. So then he now needs the rest. And by Pedri coming back, Gavi will have a rest. He'll be then put in at the right time, so he won't get burnt out. I think it's working out nicely for that midfield for Spain and also for Barcelona. And yeah, Pedri is a magnificent player.
Well, Barcelona moving on against Napoli means that they are now in the last 16 of the Europa League, and the draw was made earlier today. It's Galatasaray who they'll be facing. The games get underway on the 9th of March. A few others of note: Sevilla taking on West Ham, Real Betis will face Eintracht Frankfurt, and Leipzig will take on Spartak Moscow. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Sunday brings with it the Carabao Cup final between Chelsea and Liverpool as we take a look at their stats for the season for 2022, in fact, the calendar year, in all competitions when the two sides have met in the Premier League this season. It's been draws on both occasions, but there is lots to discuss when it comes to this final on Sunday. And here to talk more about it, we have Craig Burley, Jules Theron, Stuart Robson and Don Hutchison as well. Craig, I want to start by talking about Lukaku. Will he play? Should he start?
No. Not unless there's a outbreak of something. Don't see why he should start. I mean, I believe they're all fit from their exploits the other day. Havertz is starting to show up. No. I mean, there's absolutely no reason in this world. There's no sentiment for him starting. There's no... It's not a... this is not a kindergarten here. This is a big cup competition. Yes, it's the not the it's the lowest one in terms of domestically in England, in terms of the, where they what they'd want to win, but it's still important. And so, no, he has done nothing to suggest. In fact, if he was named in the team, I think it would raise eyebrows in that dressing room with the other players. That's how bad it has gotten for me.
Would you agree with that, Robbo?
Absolutely. I saw him play in the flesh against Plymouth in the Cup, where he didn't touch the ball that often in that game. The crowd started to get onto him. He looked lacking in confidence. When the ball came into him, he wasn't getting hold of it. He wasn't making the right runs in the box. I think they had Ziyech must have crossed the ball about 15 times in the first half, and Lukaku never got anywhere near it. So he's a player that needs to play with confidence. He's not playing with confidence at the moment, and it would be a major surprise if he's picked in the side. And I think it would be a mistake if he's picked in the side by Tuchel.
Would you say that too, Don, that it would be a mistake if Lukaku's in the side?
It would be, Kay, on current form. I mean, he's lacking so much confidence. You know, it depends what Thomas Tuchel sees. He might see a player that looks hungry. I mean, I didn't agree with what Thomas Tuchel said the other day. He said he looks mentally and physically tired. I mean, dear me, he's played 10 games. Played 10 games and you're tired. And you're physically and mentally tired. I don't get that one whatsoever. Me and Craig talked about the lack of touches. Two touches in the first half, one from a kickoff, seven in total. That is just ridiculous. That tells me two things. That tells me Lukaku's either been a bit lazy, not showing for the ball, or the players don't actually trust him, so they're not putting the ball into him quick enough. I would be stunned. I think it's more of a Thomas Tuchel picking Havertz and probably picking Timo Werner, because Timo Werner's been quite good against Liverpool, stretching the play. I see that more than Lukaku starting.
What are your thoughts on it, Jules?
I agree with the boys. The only thing is the physical aspect of it. And when you come up against Virgil van Dijk and Joel Matip or Ibrahima Konate, one of the two with van Dijk, I think Havertz is a lightweight. Let's be honest here. I think Lukaku and that presence, that physicality could be useful. And also because Liverpool would play with a really high line and there would be a lot of space to run in behind. And for that, Lukaku, okay, Venice is another option, but I think Lukaku can run in behind far more than Kai Havertz. For example, Kai Havertz has more confidence, and the confidence might be an issue, and just for that it might be the only reason, and it's a very right reason to put him on the bench and keep him on the bench. I think he was on the bench against Lille to ease the pressure and for people to stop talking about the Palace game and what happened with the seven touches, etc. So I can see Tuchel bringing him back for that game, just for a pure physical side of things for Chelsea, especially with Reece James coming back as well in the team, quite likely to be a starter for that final, and putting the crosses in for Romelu Lukaku. But again, I agree with the boys. I could also see Kai Havertz easily keeping his place in the team, though.
Yeah, I mean, I understand there's a running in behind, but you got to get the guy to run at the right times and with the right desire and pace and aggression. And I would slightly come at it from the opposite way. I think that physical presence would be a comfort to Van Dijk and Matip, or Konate, probably Matip.
How?
Well, because Van Dijk has that all the time. He sees it and he's quite happy to get tight or drop off. Or they're two big physical defenders. I think that's easier for them than having the movement of somebody coming in and out and dropping there and then people making runs from wide to in. Different players. Lukaku's more static, certainly at the moment. He's very static. And I think that would be an easy... Yeah, OK, it's a bit more to worry about if a ball comes in the box. But as a generalisation, you know, Havertz and Ziyech and whoever plays there have a bit more movement. I think with a static player like Lukaku and two big, really good, powerful centre-halves for Liverpool, particularly Van Dijk, I think he would just relish that. I think he would prefer to have that than people giving him some problems. You know, do I go into midfield? Do I have to drop in? Do I go with the runner? You know, all these sort of things that what we'd call a false sort of number nine can give you. But we'll see which way he goes. But I can tell you, if the Chelsea fans turn up at Wembley and they see Lukaku on the team sheet, they're not going to be particularly pleased about it. I don't think they want him to play.
Who needs the trophy more at this point, Liverpool or Chelsea?
I think Tuchel needs it. I don't think... Look, none of them are getting the sack, right? So, Chelsea are in the title race, still. Liverpool, it's tight. They're playing City in April. They're in the Champions League. Klopp has a million miles in the bank. Tuchel works for a different animal. Yeah, he's not, his job's not a threat. But no trophies potentially, and there's a long way to go. And if they drift further away from the top teams in the league, it just puts more pressure on. So I say that Tuchel needs it more, primarily because who he's working for.
Liverpool are favourites in this one. It is two German tacticians going up against one another, but it's the odds makers going with Liverpool. Would you say that, Don?
I would on current form, Kate. You'd have to say that. I think when you look at Liverpool, the only absentee might be Firmino. Jota might make it, but even if Jota's injured, they've played Mane through the middle in the last game. Diaz off the left, Salah off the right. You look at the midfield, it's sensational. Thiago's in good form. Jordan Henderson, Fabinho. The back four's the back four. I think Kelleher'll probably play in goal. I think Jurgen Klopp's intimated that today. I think for Chelsea's point of view, there's a couple of worries. I'm not sure Ziyech is going to make it from his injury, and Kovacic, who limped off during the week against Lille as well. They're the two concerns, but he'll have Mason Mount back and he's got different options. But I think on current form, if the game sort of goes how you think it's going to go, Liverpool win.
What's your prediction, Robbo?
Yeah, I agree with Don. I think Liverpool will win. At the moment, their front three, whoever that front three is, are playing brilliantly. And Don just mentioned Diaz coming in on that left-hand side. If Mane plays through the middle and the two front players, Firmino and Jota, aren't fully fit, Salah's in great form. They're going to play a high-energy midfield against probably Jorginho coming in for Kovacic and Conte. Conte was brilliant in the midweek against Lille, but he's going to be up against it with three Liverpool players in there. The one weakness for Liverpool, and I'll always say it, is defensively. Alexander-Arnold, for me, cannot defend. And if Chelsea keep attacking down that left-hand side, they can cause him all sorts of problems, because in 1v1 situations, and his positional play is really poor, Alexander-Arnold.
Who wins it for you, Jules?
I think Liverpool have to be favourite, even if it's slight favourite, considering the form and the run of form that they've been having and scoring goals for fun. I think Chelsea, when it comes to finals, okay, they lost the FA Cup one to Leicester, but the Champions League one, the Club World Cup one, the Super Cup one, and then this one coming as well. I have to say, I fancy Chelsea winning it. It would be a narrow score. I can see them winning 1-0, for example. That's what they did in the Champions League final to City, and I can see them using a similar tactical plan against Liverpool in this League Cup final to win 1-0 as well.
Have you got a favourite?
Draw.
And then who wins?
Well, I think Liverpool are just starting to get that bit of pace about their game again. Mane's got back in amongst the goals. Salah's brushed off the African Cup of Nations disappointment. Yeah, they've played some weaker teams domestically recently. Struggled for long periods against Norwich, it has to be said. Obviously demolished Leeds. Chelsea, rock solid for most part. By a smidge, I'm just going to say Liverpool.
All right. Well, just a little reminder now of what Antonio Conte said this week after the 1-0 loss to Burnley on Wednesday. He said, maybe I'm not so good. Tottenham called me to change things. I could just take my salary, but I'm too honest. We lost 4 out of 5 games. This is unacceptable. I want to take responsibility. If I have that, I'm open to every decision. Bit of a contrast to what we heard from him today in the pre-match presser ahead of Leeds. He said, sometimes I don't like that I see that someone tried to create a problem between me and the club, because this is not true. Believe me, Daniel Levy knows very well that I'm here to help the club in every moment and will help the club until the end. What do you make of that, Craig?
Well, he doesn't know at the moment whether he's having his dinner or whether he's having a haircut. He really doesn't. I'm sorry, why doesn't he just take his salary and shut up and get on with it? Right? Gobbledygook. He's saying one day is the greatest thing. And then he's running on the pitch beating Man City, I get that. Then he's like all doom and gloom again, you know, losing to Burnley. Then he's telling us his four players down that were really important to him that never hardly played. Then he told us that the players that come in had literally no experience and therefore the future, when one of them's got almost 50 caps for Uruguay, the other's a Swedish international. For God's sake, man, make your mind up. If you don't want to be there, just go. Just go. If it's not what you thought it was, maybe you're waiting for a bigger payoff. I don't know what you're waiting for. What, you're going to wait for the summer and think Daniel Levy's going to give you 300 million? No, it's not going to happen. But I'm sorry. At least be consistent with your moaning. Consistent. One day it's one thing, and the next day it's another. I think everybody now is just confused and fed up with it. And I think, Daniel, I think the ownership at Tottenham and the players and the supporters must be thinking, what's the weekend going to hold for us? What Antonio Conte's turning up? I have to say, he's making an embarrassment of himself. He's not. His stock is high, or was high, rightly so, but he's taking a knock from me at the moment, because roll your sleeves up and get on with what you've got. No?
No. Well, Jules, I see you laughing there, and I know that you talked a lot about this on the Gavin Jules podcast this week.
I love what Craig just said. I think he's spot on as well, completely spot on, and wanted really well, and his reaction, he's a very emotional guy. Of course, I think maybe the rain and the win in Burnley made him even more emotional, because for him to almost ask Spurs to sack him, because that's what it was after Burnley. Maybe his vocabulary in English maybe didn't really want to say exactly what he said, but it was basically, well, you know, the club have to make a decision with me now, and you know, clearly, and let me go, kind of thing. Very different today. He even said, oh, the club is happy with me. Well, of course, they, it's a blessing that you're there. You're far too good for Spurs. So they're never going to say, we're not happy with you, Antonio. We might sack you. This is never going to happen. It's all down to him. He does what he wants. He wants to stay, he stays. He wants to leave, he leaves. They're never going to sack him or anything like this. Yes, he was disappointed not to get more players in January, and we can see and understand why. But Craig is right. You can't have one day, this is the best squad you've ever worked with, and then 3 days later, this is rubbish. I've never lost 4 in 5 in my career. I've had enough of this. I'm not good enough. I mean, this is crazy stuff. I mean, it's very entertaining, but it looked like a broken man, I have to say, on Wednesday night. Really broken by Spurs and the Spursiness of Spurs. Now let's see what happens to Leeds. If they lose at Leeds and it's 5 out of 6 defeats now, I think he'll explode. I think he will literally explode right in front of our eyes.
Robbo, you're a big Antonio Conte fan. Will you defend him?
I'm a big Antonio Conte fan of his coaching and what he's done at the teams he's been at and the way he plays his football. What I'm not a fan of is the way he's trying to deal with it in the press. It reminds me of a manager that used to be a great manager and then started to manage through the press, Jose Mourinho. And Antonio Conte is going down the same route. And that's going to be a problem for him. He's got to manage on the training field, do the right things with the team, get them playing how he wants them to play, and stop moaning and just get on with it.
Don, what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, I couldn't agree more with everyone saying. I had a massive argument at work today and someone tried to stick up for him saying, oh, it's not his fault, it's the player's fault, it's Daniel Levy's fault. And I'm thinking, how's it Daniel Levy's fault that you've lost 4 out of 5? How's it Daniel Levy's fault that you've lost against Burnley? Jules is right. The week before, oh, it's the best squad I've ever worked with. When he's up here, he's up here. And when he's low, it's the end of the world. And I think there was a tiny little bit lost in translation where he was sort of saying about the paycheck and maybe I'm not as good. He wasn't being sincere. And, you know, if he loses against Leeds tomorrow, I actually can't imagine what he might say, what he might do, whether he quits, whether he walks away. I couldn't tell you. But I've never seen a manager so up and down and so emotional. He's passionate, granted, and he wants to do the best for himself, the club and the players. But as Craig said, knuckle down, man. January window's gone. You've got a crop of players to work with to try and get close to top four or get into European spots. Knuckle down and get some results.
I know, that's the thing. It's not like they've got nothing to play for. They had at one point, I don't know what games they've got in hand now, but they had 3 games in hand on Man United, maybe even 4 at one point, and not the most difficult Man City apart looking fixture list. But it's been embarrassing. Now, all is not gone, but he's trying to push the car over the cliff, right? It's dangling at the moment, and he's out the back trying to push it with the players in it. I mean, it's incredible. We sat here 3 months ago, whatever it was, to a man and went, great coach, watch what's going to happen at this football club. Watch this unfold. The histrionics, the whinging, the transfers, disappointments. We've already had that. We've had the whinging. As Don said, if one game in particular, I think, stands out for me. Losing to Burnley are fighting for their lives. going to Man City winning, but Southampton at home recently, it was a close game in scoreline. But trust me, they got an absolute trousering and a football lesson at their own stadium from a team with a very good manager in Ralph Hasenhüttl, who sell the house and all the belongings every summer almost, and they have to go again, Hasenhüttl, with all sorts of, you know, journeyman players and whatnot, and they package them together and they get on with it. They went there and they obliterated this Tottenham side. That was a big concern for me. The fact that he was able to go and batten the hatches at Man City down, and Harry Kane pulled him out of the fire, well, that's fine. But you've got to start getting some results against the rest. And if, as Don said, if they lose to Leeds, who, by the way, have been all over the parish, have missed their best players in Bamford and Calvin Phillips, and are really struggling, if they lose to Leeds at the weekend, oh, we're going to have some fun. We're going to have some fun.
Yeah, I wonder what we'll talk about at the weekend if that's to happen. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. A Friday night calcio in Serie A. Both Milan clubs in action, both of them drawing into having the chance to go level on points with Milan at the top of the table, but failing to do so. Stuart Robson and Don Hutchison with us to talk more about this. Stuart, you're on the call for this game. Inter, worrying times for them, isn't it? Under Simone Inzaghi, this is their worst run, and they just seemingly can't score goals.
No, that is a problem for them. They played OK against Liverpool in the Champions League, couldn't score goals there. They lost to Milan when they dominated the game with Giroud scoring two late goals. They only scored the one against Napoli. So it's a poor run for them. They lost to Sassuolo as well. And today I thought they tried to play out from the back when it wasn't really on to play out from the back, because Genoa were pressing high up the field in the first 20 minutes. They were too slow in possession. And when you've got Alexis Sanchez and Dzeko up front, at the moment there's not a lot of pace to run in behind. Dzeko will obviously win balls in the air and he'll lead the line quite well and hold up the play, but at the moment the two aren't combining with each other, so I'm surprised he left Martinez out the side. In the end they played okay, they should have scored goals, they had a header that hit the crossbar, D'Ambrosio, but they didn't have enough guile in the top third of the field, and that was the problem for them.
Don, this week Inzaghi revealed that the target for Inter this season is the top four. Is he fair enough in thinking and saying that?
No, I think that's a little bit of kidology. Surely, you know, he wants to win the league. Their form is worrying, Kay, as you said. No wins in four. And I watched the game tonight and Stuart called it absolutely spot on. And it was one of them where you're watching the game and the first 45 was a little bit slow, a little bit pedestrian. I'm thinking, like, surely he's got to get Lautaro Martinez on. He'd done that around about the hour mark. He made a difference. They looked a little bit more lively. There was more urgency in them. And then the last 10 minutes, Inter sort of played a game where it was desperation football. And funny enough, they looked better for it. As Robbo said, they struck the crossbar. They had half chances. They had a penalty claim. It wasn't a penalty, but they had a claim. And they were putting pressure on Genoa. And it was almost like, where's that performance been for the first hour? They left it far too late.
Yeah, Inter playing after Milan on the night, who took on Udinese. That game finished 1-1, as we mentioned, which is why Inter would have been able to go level with their neighbours at the top of the table. As for Milan, though, Robbo, look at this now. That's back-to-back draws against Salernitana and Udinese. Then you think back to that loss against Spezia earlier in January. This is not good enough if you're challenging for the Scudetto, is it?
Certainly not. And at the end of the game, they were quite lucky to get a draw out of this. They did the opposite to Inter. They started the game quite well. They got a good goal through Lau. I thought their formation was quite good. They got their fullbacks high up the field. The two holding midfield players had two jobs to do, holding in midfield and also covering the fullbacks. They had a lot of attacking players. Giroud didn't really affect the game, but Lau always looked a threat. Diaz was getting on the ball and making things happen. But in the second half, Udinese started to take control of the game. Milan became more defensive. The fullbacks went deeper and deeper. And in the end, Udinese played quite well and should have won the game. And Delafeu was a constant threat to them. At the moment, both Inter and Milan aren't playing well enough.
So what's going on, Don? Are Milan playing down to the opposition?
Udinese are in a false position. I commented on them last week against Lazio and they played really well. They've got good players like Delafeu and like Pereira who can turn a game. But Milan at San Siro should be beating Udinese. I just worry at the top end of the pitch when you've got Zlatan who's out, who's obviously 40, he's not quick anymore. You know, Giroud's the same. They need Leao, they need Diaz, they need quick players in and around Giroud. And they're getting their defenders back, decent in midfield. It's not far off a Milan full-strength side, but the form, again, is worrying. I mean, you can look at the form, depends on how you look at it. You could think, well, unbeaten in five, not the end of the world, but look at the results, three draws in there. So when you're trying to go for a title against the best sides, I mean, the big winners so far is going to be Juve and Napoli, who both play this weekend. So the two Milan clubs severely, severely have dropped points.
Yeah, and we'll see how those games turn out, because right now it seems that nobody wants to win the Scudetto. Both Robbo and Don will be back with us for Extra Time, and you can always stay up to date with Extra Time when the panel answer your questions by subscribing to our YouTube channel.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ah, another week sitting by the phone waiting on Gomez or Salazar calling me. Not a thing.
Poor Craig. Fortunately, he's always invited to Extra Time. You should stay with us too. Thanks so much with us.
Try to get out of it.
On the latest edition of ESPN FC. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Craig Burley here, Stuart Robson and Don Hutchison as well. And we have a repeat question from yesterday, which was a good one.
Oh, was it?
So get ready, guys.
Okay.
It's the penultimate question today, and
all
it's
right.
on the
well,
way.
Give us time to think about it, even though we don't know what the question is.
It's one of those that you have to hear and then decide when you hear it. All right. Don, first question. What's the percentage chance of Liverpool winning a treble?
20%.
That's not a bad percentage, is it?
I'm getting better at this, you know.
I'm not venturing above. Well, no, because you haven't put the second part to it. I'm not venturing above 10. Maybe 5.
Right.
Oh, well, 5? Yeah.
10%. No, 10% chance. I mean, it's slim. Slim, I'd say. Slim.
Is that all right for you, Percentage King, Don?
Yeah, it's not bad. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll knock it down 5. I'll knock it down to 15. Meet in the middle between me and Craig.
All right. Rob, I'll start with you for this one. For the lads.
Why do I get paper?
I don't know. I don't know why you get paper. It's a waste of time and a waste of paper. Robbo, for the lads, start one, bench one, sit one. These iconic caretaker coaches, Roy Hodgson, Sam Allardyce and Tony Pulis.
And what have I got to do with them?
You've got to start one, so you've got to use one. You've got to have one as your backup, and you've got to say, no, I don't want that one.
OK, I'm going to go Roy Hodgson that I would start with. My backup would be Tony Pulis, and Sam Allardyce would be nowhere near my club. Thank you very much.
No love for Big Sam, Don. What about you?
No, I am concurring 100% with Robbo.
Craig?
I'm definitely Roy Hodgson, yeah. Well, managing where he's managed, international football and club football. I don't know, I mean, people forget when what Sam Allardyce did at Bolton. It was amazing. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going Sam Allardyce.
All right.
And Tony Pulis. Well, I don't mind either of them.
All right. Which team had the worst fans? Do you have any stories, Craig?
The worst as in...
Well, you can define that. Maybe the scariest, maybe the ones that were the meanest.
Well, Millwall would be a little scary.
Yep.
West Ham. Yeah, players don't really get scared. Some do, I suppose. I don't think... Maybe 30, 40 years ago, when things were a little different. But I don't think players... No, you don't really get... doesn't come into the equation. That makes sense.
Yeah, you weren't scared of anyone, basically.
No, I mean, some are just more vocal or abusive than others. Or violent. Some of them.
Robbo is smirking. I'm not sure why.
Pat supporters. I mean, when I was playing at Arsenal, and to a certain degree West Ham, the Tottenham fans, particularly when I was at Arsenal, hated me because I'd been sent off against them when I was 18 in a Boxing Day game, and I became public enemy number one. So going there was always a little bit difficult as I was getting off the coach and getting back onto the coach. But in the main, you didn't have too many problems with supporters. The only time I did have a real problem was when we were doing the Champions League game for ESPN when Tottenham were playing Liverpool. And as I was walking to the ground, a whole load of Liverpool supporters tried to grab hold of my badge and take it off me and get themselves into the ground, which wasn't very pleasant.
Oh no, I'm sure it wasn't.
Well, it's funny that, but I also have had more problems since I stopped playing than I played.
I wonder why.
That's not problems. I don't see it as a problem. And Derek Ray saw this as a problem when they were trying to climb on the gantry and attack me during a live commentary. And Derek thought he was going to get pulverised and was calling for backup to the director for... We laugh about it now.
It's a pity they failed, Craig.
Well, they did fail, but I can tell you, Robbo, there was a few heads very close to my monitor on the gantry that when I was watching replay. But yeah, you know, walking to games, you know, walking to stuff, you know, I think I've had more abuse that way than when I was playing. Because you're in amongst it then, see, and then you're having to go upstairs to gantries and you've said something, probably, that hasn't gone down well. Because,
in your case, probably.
Well, because they only want to hear their story, every team, don't they? We're all biased against, as I always say, we're always biased against your team. Because it's your team. You support one team. We look at all the teams. So, people, I mean, go on, Robbo.
Sorry, Craig. I was going to say, Kay, for Don, the fans were frightened of Don with his disciplinary record. The amount of times he was sent off, the fans were frightened of Don, not the other way around.
Honestly, Kay, I've played for 10 clubs and I knock it down to 9 every single time because one of them will never, ever count that I played for them. And I hated them and they hated me like you wouldn't believe, and that was Millwall. I made the most ridiculous move of my life leaving West Ham when my boy was about 5, and I made a sort of selfish move that I didn't want to be too away from my boy. I didn't want to move far away. I could have went to the MLS, could have went to Australia, and I left West Ham to go to Millwall. And let me tell you, I got battered every single day from the Millwall fans. I remember one day.
Did you not do your homework? Don, did you not do your homework?
Robbo, my boy was 5. I didn't want to be too far away from him. So even though I'm saying selfish, I was looking after my lad because I wanted to be close to him. So Millwall was the team that come in for me. Could have went to America, could have went to Australia. Went to Millwall. And I remember scoring at the New Den. And there was about 15. And the lads will know, Craig. Kay. Right outside of the New Den. The reception where you walk in is the player's car park. And about 15 fans were standing by my car, massive, like, having a go at me, like, with expletives, like, you wouldn't believe. and I was in panic mode. I thought, I need to get out of here. This is ridiculous.
What so did you do so wrong?
It was just
because I played for West Ham. That's it. And I literally got sent to Coventry. I phoned my mate, who was Adrian Heath, who was at Coventry, and I went, Inchi, get me away from here. And he took me up to Coventry.
He didn't quite weigh up the pros and cons of that one, Don, lad. You never...
No, it's but isn't it no one likes us, we don't care? It sounds like you do care a little bit, Don.
No, I do care because, like, what I couldn't get my head around, Kate, I understand the rivalry between Millwall and West Ham, or West Ham and Tottenham, Newcastle, Sunderland, Rangers, Celtic. I get all that. But what I couldn't grasp was, when I was pulling a Millwall jersey on and scoring, they still hated me.
Like, that's why I'm asking, what did you do so wrong? Could you not convince them and change their minds?
No, because they're so set in their ways. It's anything between the two clubs. It will never, ever, nothing will ever appease Millwall fans.
The first one who did it was Paul Goddard, went from West Ham, I think, to Millwall for 800,000, or he might have gone to Newcastle and then went to Millwall. As he got out the car on the very first day he was there, the new big signing, the same people that were probably round your car got round his car and in so many words said, we don't want you here, don't even try and play for us for too many years.
Crazy.
You won't be here very long. And I think he lasted about 6 weeks.
At least you were allowed in the club car park, Don, to be abused. At the end at Derby, I wasn't even allowed in the club car park. I was having a run in with the manager. I was told to go and park a mile away from the ground. So, not even allowed in. I would have taken some abuse for a 100-yard walk rather than a 1 mile walk in the rain.
Oh, no, I feel that Don's scarred by that experience.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. Next question for you, Robbo. The Chelsea board expect Christensen to move to Barcelona in the summer. What do you think he could bring to this Barcelona squad?
Well, he's a composed player. He's done quite well in recent times for Chelsea, playing on the right-hand side of a back three in the main. He's quite good in the air. He reads danger. He's comfortable on the ball. Is he better than Araujo? At the moment, he probably is, but Araujo is getting better and better. He could... Do a lot for them, I think. It'd be a good signing for Barcelona.
So here is the question that the guys got yesterday.
You built this up, you know.
Yeah. Same question to you guys from yesterday. I'm starting with you, Craig. Which would you pick? Which team to be a part of? You're part of the team.
Oh, I think I saw someone.
Yeah. Leicester's title win in 2016. Liverpool's comeback in the 2005 Champions League final. Aguero's last-minute goal against QPR. Or Solskjaer's winner in 99 to clinch the treble for Manchester United?
Quite what easy a question.
No, it's quite easy for me. Man United.
Why?
Well, because it's the season, it defines the whole season. Goals right at the end. They lift the creme de la creme of European football and have pretty much mopped up domestically. So, as good as all the rest of them were, that was... No, I don't think... That's not difficult for me, that.
What would you go for, Robbo?
I would go with Craig, absolutely. But I would say for the players that didn't have quite so much ambition, were slightly lesser players on lesser money, the Leicester story was great. Because when they started that season, they were favourites to be relegated. Ranieri had come in, and that must have been a great team spirit. And from that, most of those players went on to do much better. Think of the likes of Mahrez and Conte. So, yeah, it would have been great to be part of that Leicester team.
But see, that's a different, before Don says, but that's a different context. What's a bigger story? Because Leicester was probably the biggest story.
No, but you get to be, because maybe on yesterday was more, you get to be on the team.
Well, I'd
want
to be part of that Man United team. Because it was a brilliant team and it, as I say, it mopped up. OK, it was outplayed by Bayern Munich in the final, but scoreline's a scoreline. But there's a story in us where you want to be as a player. And I think, well, I would have wanted to be Man United that season.
All of them are where were you when moments. Don, nobody went for Liverpool tonight. Nobody went for Liverpool yesterday. We didn't have Stevie Nicol on here. Who would you go for?
See, if you're Aguero, you want to be Aguero, don't you? You want to be the man that's immortal, that's done that, which will never, ever happen again. But for us, I'd love to say Liverpool because that was one of the most iconic Champions League finals ever. But Craig's right. When you're asked that question there and you bolt on the treble, that's it, isn't it? That's pinnacle stuff. Winning the treble, Champions League. It's got to be United. It's got to be in that United side. It has to be.
There's an anti-Liverpool bias in the show now. It's switched from Man United. Who was on yesterday? Xhaka?
Yesterday was Xhaka, Ale, and who else was on extra time with us?
What'd they say?
I can't even remember what I had for dinner. what did they say? One went for Aguero, Ale went for Leicester, Xhaka went for Manchester United, nobody went for Liverpool.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So,
Aguero was an expression. Was
anti-Liverpool. Anti-Liverpool, that's what we are.
Liverpool.
Hold on, get Nickel on the phone.
We need Nickel.
Yeah. On the blow on
Stevie here. Will definitely go Liverpool.
There's absolutely no way he's picking any of the others.
He's definitely not going Man United. Oh my
no,
God.
Not a chance.
100%. 100%.
No chance.
He's not doing that.
Absolutely no way. All right.
Later done.
Not a question for the guys.
Oh, good.
Well, it is actually for
not
you.
Not a question for the guys.
Well, it says, just wondering on behalf of someone if there's an update on the status of the ESPN gym. Open? Still closed?
Oh, still closed. I went in the other day. No, well, I didn't go in it. I went in the initial door, which opened with my security pass. And the second one, I had a bash at it. Lights were out. All the equipment there, and that's still closed. Protocol. Can't do anything about it. Way above our pay grade making those decisions. But clearly, yeah, it's still closed, so.
Have you guys ever seen Craig Burley in a gym, Robbo or Don?
No.
No, I've seen him in a Turkish bath, which was a sight for sore eyes, over in Berlin, if you remember, Craig. That was an interesting trip. And I can tell you, he hadn't been to the gym at that point.
I hadn't. That was before I started here, and I was bashing away at this gym at work. It's a brilliant gym, and it's free as well, I believe. And God, I was in the zone. So yeah, I was. But I do, you know. Robbo does this roar machine as well. One of my things, the roar machine, marvellous.
Yeah, well,
gets you in shape.
I have heard.
Who suggested the Turkish bath then? Who suggested that? Was that Craig or Robbo's idea?
No. This was part of a piece that had to be done. Don't go too deep into it, Don. It was part of a piece, and it was filmed. There was a camera crew in there. Trust me, you don't want to know.
Okay. Now, I've just heard that you really go all guns blazing when you're in the gym.
I do.
And when you're in that ESPN gym.
I'm going to back Craig up here. When he was injured, and we went to the same physio, Craig was fit. He did some great times on the rower. He was fully fit, fully motivated. He looked $1 million at the time and fully fit. There we go.
Unlike now. The roar machine, man, I tell you, I used to bash it out. I used to bet the players rehabbing and stuff to beat me. Not that some could beat me, but it's like, you know, doing all these ergo tests, 2,000 metres and that, and falling off the roar machine at the end because you've basically pulled for, you know, legs and arms for like full out. I mean, it's unbelievable. You'd only do it once.
Right.
You'll get your best time and you'll probably never beat it because it's so hard.
Well,
I know you're looking at me thinking, this can't be the same guy.
No,
I can't deal
but
with
who
it.
Can we blame? ESPN having their gym closed. It was Frank LeBeuf that was on with us yesterday, by the way, speaking of the gym, because he's still bragging about knowing Aubameyang's dad.
Frank's still talking about when he was invited to Chelsea by Bruce Bock, and the fans were singing, Frank LeBeuf and all that sort of nonsense.
No, he wasn't talking about that yesterday, but he was the third one
on the
panel.
Frank was starting the songs. The people walking past him, they hadn't a clue who he was. Sing about me, I'm Frank LeBeuf.
You can do what you like when you win the World Cup. Anyway, thanks so much for sending in your questions. Let's see if that
World Cup. He stole it from Laurent Blanc.
Ah, not very nice.
It's what he did.
Thanks for being with us. ESPN FC available 7 days a week. Make sure you're always with us.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.